Blog Talk Radio.
Episode of Counts and Marks with Joe Stasiak and Steve Callis coming at you right now, 5:30 East Coast time. And once again, without further ado, our man Steve Callis on the line. How you doing, Steven?
All good, Joe. Great to be with you.
Always, my friend, always. Let's start with the NBA. We got a lot to get through today. NBA, NHL, we're going to talk some baseball. But NBA, big story, Kawhi Leonard out for game two. He was rocking and rolling, 23 minutes, 26 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists in game one. Spurs built a huge lead, 25 points. They were leading by 20 at halftime, and I think you texted me and said there's no bigger case for Kawhi Leonard to be the MVP of the league, because when he went down, that lead evaporated and ultimately ended up in a 2-point loss to the Warriors.
Well, I think it's similar. In 2000, I wrote an article that Mike Piazza should be the MVP. I'm not even a Met guy, but Piazza got hurt the last month of that season, even though they made the playoffs. And the Mets were terrible down the stretch, even though they wound up making the playoffs. But there are times when you can judge a guy's value by when he's not there. Rarely do you see it in one game, but I think this is the greatest example of one game that I've ever seen, frankly, because it's not that the game was over, but you certainly didn't, when he got hurt, but you certainly didn't doubt that Golden State could get back in. And once that, you know, train started running, they just started running over. Now, to the Spurs' credit, they came back and they were up 5, you know, with like 2 minutes to go. But then Golden State took those 3 threes in one possession, and when the third one went down to tie the game, you kind of knew that was it. But, you know, I'd be as concerned. Look, you know Popovich is Popovich. He's always got an angle, and he was killing Pachulia like, what, they're going to suspend him or something? But he said he has a history. And I saw the plays that, according to Popovich, the history was, and there was no other play where he would go up and put a foot under, you know, put his foot under a guy. I don't think he did it intentional. Very big guy coming out.
You, what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, well, he's kind of lugging out to try and contest a three. He's not going to get there. I'll tell you what I found fascinating, this might be strange, but what I found fascinating was on the first one where he backed into his own players and stepped on David Lee's foot. Why doesn't David Lee, why don't these guys move their feet?
Right,
they could
get
have at least
feet out of the way.
No, seriously, I'm not even trying to be funny. I'm
no,
laughing,
I know.
But
totally
your man is shooting. I mean, his butt must have been 6 inches from David Lee's face when he stepped on his foot. So you have a sense, I would think, of being on the bench. Can I move my feet? Can I move them sideways? Can I move them back? That was bizarre to me. But in terms of Pachulia doing it on purpose, I don't know. Everybody and his mother is now saying that should be a flagrant foul. I agree. If you intentionally do it, that should be a flagrant foul. But it's kind of hard, you know, to figure out intent. Do we know when the guy's throwing at the batter in baseball? Yeah, most of the time we do know. Can you
pretty
say
much
for sure it's with total intent? I'm not 100% sure. Every baseball pitcher in the history of the world said, the ball got away with me. I was trying to go inside. Nobody ever says, I was trying to hit him in the head, or I was trying to drill him in the ribs. So, you know, that's going to be a hard thing to show. But I would be just as concerned with the first one, frankly, because that seemed to me to be eminently preventable. And once again, nobody said boo about it. I don't know if somebody asked David Lee. That would be a weird question to ask, but a question I thought that should be asked. But again, make no mistake, without Leonard, you know, and we've talked about this before, the Spurs are not the Spurs anymore. Now, give Ginobili credit. He's playing like he's 29, not 39.
29, yeah.
I mean, he's just been unbelievable, so give him credit. But there's no Parker, there's no Duncan. Aldridge has been good and bad. He's been really good a couple of games, but he's been so-so in the other ones. And part of the reason they lost, if he could have made some big shots down the stretch, they still would have won game one. But Aldridge is a very good player. But the notion that the Spurs are still the Spurs, which makes it all the more interesting that they were winning by 23 when Leonard had to come out. So that would have been a fascinating, you know, everybody agrees they would have won that game if he didn't get hurt. So where does this take him now? He's not playing game two. I don't think they were going to win anyway, obviously. I would love to pick an upset of Golden State, but I'm picking that in the finals, not in the conference finals. So But I will say, and I believe that here's Exhibit A. Now, I don't know. You know, they're not giving out the MVP till like June 26th, but I'm guessing
right.
the votes are already in because it's for the regular
yes.
season. It's obviously not for
That's
the players.
Correct.
But if you ever wanted to put in a video of a game or watch a DVD of a game that shows you the value of one player to one team more than, in my view, other players to other teams, just put that tape in.
No, I agree. But let me just ask you this, because Kawhi or no Kawhi, shouldn't you hold on to a 25-point lead no matter who it is in the NBA playoffs? I mean, I get it, best player, maybe best player in the league. The other guys get paid, too. 25-point lead evaporates. I mean, there's got to be accountability there.
I totally agree. But I think, didn't they take him right into the locker room right when that happened? Because
yes.
Golden State immediately went on an 18-0 run.
Yep.
And I don't know another team that really has players who can go off in one quarter like, you know, Curry did, and then in another
quarter,
Durant did.
Durant.
I mean, it
yes.
was unbelievable. So they combined
yes.
for 74. You know, their whatever you want to call it is, you know, like Durant said, oh, we didn't go into the huddle and say, Kawhi Leonard's gone. Let's now, you know, play better or something. But guess what? That's exactly what I don't know what they said, but that's exactly
right.
what happened. And once, you know, they were like sharks in the water once it started
yes.
going. And it went down pretty quick. I mean, it went down 18-0. I agree. Should they have won that game? Yes, and that's a bad sign. I think they looked to Aldridge to be the man, which he had been in the other game when Kawhi Leonard didn't play Game 6 against Houston. Like, I sent a text to my son. Here's the MVP argument right here, and he goes, "Yeah, well, what about Game 6 against Houston?"
I was just
going
to ask you about that because they won by 39 points and he didn't
right.
play.
And I said, you're right, except Houston's not Golden State.
Right. They're not Golden
so,
State.
So I still think San Antonio was closer to Houston than they are to Golden State, but that game certainly made me wonder. But now I don't think we're going to be able to find out to wonder, because if they go down 2-0, I know it's, you know, you protect your home court, blah, blah, blah. But you also
sure.
have to wonder now when Leonard comes back with three of these injuries in the last three games. He hurt it three different times and will now have missed
yep.
two games because of it. You know, when you
yep.
sprain your ankle, it's easy to sprain it again. And that little tweak that would not bother you if you're 100% becomes a sprained ankle. And the bad tweak now puts you out for a few games. So, I don't know that this would have been a great series, although, you know, when Leonard came out at that point, you would have thought, wow, this might really be a great series if they can steal one and Golden State. But I don't know that it's going to be now. You give them virtually no chance in Game 2. At least I give them virtually no chance in Game 2 without him, because, again, we'll see. Maybe my son's right. We'll see where they're playing a full game without Leonard like they beat the Rockets in Game 6. So we'll see what happens
sure.
in that game. But I think it's going to be a very, very tall order. And I think what Popovich saw was, wow, we got a chance here. And when that chance was
right.
taken away by whatever you think
yep.
of the Pachulia play, he really did, you know, get angry. This was not – although at the end, I don't know if you saw his diatribe, and then at the end he said, I'm ready to take any follow-up questions now. He was trying to make that out to be kind of a funny ha-ha thing. But that's
right.
the old, he really meant what he said.
Oh, of course he did. Of course he did. He was hot, and he's always kind of hot. Let me ask you this, Steve, because the Spurs hung in there pretty good, but you make a great point. I always thought MVP by absence can be almost as strong as MVP by your play on the court. I remember Tony Romo 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they went 12
yeah.
and hurted the Cowboys. He gets hurt in
yeah.
game two of the following season. They go 4-12. To me, my vote would have been for Tony Romo that year for MVP, because Dallas looked dreadful without him, playing Brandon Weeden and Matt Castle, and it was just horrendous. But I get your point. It's a good point you make there. The other game last night, I find it funny that they start the Western Conference Finals when the other semifinals aren't even finished. But the Game 7, Celts out-duel Bradley Beal and the Wizards. They win by 10. Kyle Olynyk had a playoff high, 26 points. You know, ESPN does this thing. It's just another thing that they do. I'm not huge on it, but 45% chance they give the Celtics of beating the Cavs. I don't know who calculates that. Some computer
really?
Somewhere, but yeah, 45% chance. Where do you put the chance?
I put it at about 15-20.
That's
again,
about right.
all I would say is, and we talked about this the last couple of weeks, they went into Boston late in the season. It wasn't even a game. I think the final was 114-91, maybe,
that last game when they were in
Boston. And I think when you leave there, we go, we can not rest our players and get the number one seed, or we can rest our players. If we lose to Boston, we could just go up to Boston and kick their butt. And I think that's what they're basing all this on. Now, has Boston become a very good team? Yeah, they have. Is Isaiah Thomas a star? You bet. I mean, it's unbelievable what this guy can do.
He's a star.
But I'm just not seeing it. You know, it was interesting because, again, we talked about this. It's almost boring the first few rounds of the NBA playoffs because to me they're all playing for a right to lose to the teams who are going to be in the finals. Now, when Boston, I mean, you know the stats, I'm sure. The home team won every game. Boston and Washington played 4 times in the regular season and 7 times in the postseason, and the home team won every game. So I give Washington credit for hanging in there. And I think John Wall is a star, but boy,
absolutely,
did he just not play well.
0-11
the last 19 minutes, 0-7 from 3. And I remember debating a guy on air who actually said that John Wall would be a Hall of Famer before he ever took a shot in the NBA. And, of course, I was happy to take the other side, and I said, look, I'll just tell you one thing. If John Wall is going to be a Hall of Famer, he's going to have to really improve his shooting. Now, he has improved his shooting, but I'll analogize him to Jason Kidd, even Dr. J, in my opinion. These guys were bad shooters who became average to slightly above average shooters. Now, when Wall goes to the basket, he might be the quickest guy in the history of basketball with the ball in his hands. I mean, he's just a blur. Out of control a couple of times yesterday, but just a blur. But when he has to just take or decides to just take jumpers like he did yesterday down the stretch, however that worked out, again, 0-11, 0-7 from 3. And if Bradley Beal, this is why I asked you last week or the week before, so who's the best guard on Washington? Is it Bradley Beal or John Wall? I don't know, but in this game, Bradley Beal was monstrous, and John Wall just, you know, totally disappeared. I'll say it again. Who's the best guard on Golden State? Steph Curry or Klay Thompson? Now, everyone will say, oh, Steph Curry, 2-time MVP. And that's probably true, and Wall is probably better than Beal. But, you know, Klay Thompson's a 6'6 guy who can defend, had a couple of blocks the other day, can hit open threes as well as Steph Curry. So I don't think it's so clear. I'm just trying to make a point. And John Wall, when he hit that 3 to win game 6, and give him credit, I never thought it was going in, frankly. But when John Wall hit that 3 to win the game, and I'll say Bradley on Boston, as good as he is defensively, why you would ever, and I've written articles about defending the 3-point line, if you're up 3 with 3 seconds to go and your man has the ball, get right in him. If he goes around you and scores a 2, the worst that's going to happen is overtime if he can score. But the only way you can lose the game is let this guy take a relatively open 3, because if you watch the replay, Bradley just backed up, went inside the 3 line, backed up. And when Wall went up to shoot, he jumped towards him too late. So I've never understood the whole 3-point line. It's like, because they didn't invent it in 1890, people still don't know how to defend the 3. Why, if you're up 2, would you let a guy take a relatively open 3? Now, that was a long 3, and John Wall is not great at 3s. I don't think that was the theory, but if you give me the choice, I'll let John Wall go around me every time to take a 2, because the worst we can do is overtime. The only way you can lose the game is let him take a 3. Now, when he made that 3, they said it's the first time in John Wall's career that he's hit a shot at the end of the game that put them up to win. He's now 1-for-7 lifetime in those kinds of shots. And I'm not jumping on John Wall. Again, he's a premier player. He is a star point guard. I don't know if I'd say he's a superstar, but he is a star in the league. But if he doesn't improve his shooting, and he already has, you can only get so far as good as these guys are. I don't really know stories of guys who really weren't good shooters coming out of college. You know, in New York, when Jason Kidd played for the Nets, his name was Asen Kidd because he had no J. That was his nickname in New York. I don't know if you remember that. I don't know if it got out nationally.
I do.
But his name was Asen Kidd. Now, to his credit, he became an okay to good to above average. He was not – I don't see guys who are bad – to below average shooters in college become great shooters in the pro.
Right.
You can kill yourself. You know, I love Dr. J, but, you know, people revisionist people, oh, he became a really good shooter in the NBA.
No,
no
he
didn't.
Never a great shooter. No.
Right. So you got to be careful with those kinds of things. But, you know, at the end of the game, Greg Anthony doing the game. Wow. Boston, they have arrived. The sky could be the limit for this team. Iron Eagle, both teams have set themselves up for the future. Well, I don't know what they're watching, but the future for them isn't this year, and it ain't next year, because I don't care what happens. They're not playing, you know, to me, and maybe I'm wrong. We'll see when Boston plays them. To me, these teams for at least next year and probably the year after are playing for the right to lose to Cleveland. I don't care what I don't care what their number one seeding is. So Boston has home court advantage. You know what Cleveland said to that. You know, we beat you by 23 there three
right.
weeks ago.
We'll do it again. Yeah, I think until LeBron retires, and he's playing some of the best basketball of his career. Now,
absolutely.
There is a draft lottery tonight, and the Celts have the number one pick. I think the last time a team is in the conference finals and had the number one pick was the Lakers when the, James Worthy, I'm sorry, a long, long time ago. So even with the top pick, if they land it, you don't think they're ready to make a move on Cleveland? Is Cleveland still the dynasty until the King retires?
Well, it's interesting. I don't think until he retires, but I don't see. So give them – who do you want to give them? Are they going to draft Fultz? Are they going to take Ball? Whoever they take. What does that make them? And keep in mind, Boston's star is a little guard.
Yes.
So I don't know. They're going to play Ball at 6'6 and have Ball be the point guard and have a 5'8 shooting guard? I don't know. I don't know if he fits. It's interesting. Do I think they can get one of those guys and beat Cleveland next year? I don't. Do I think they're getting closer? Absolutely. I think Brad Stevens is a pretty good coach. Do I think Kelly Olynyk is going to score 26 points and shoot 10 for 14 against Cleveland against Cleveland this year or next year? I don't. But, you know, I give Olynyk a lot of credit because he made layups, he got rebounds, he made threes. One of those kind of guys you don't think about who steps up into Game 7. You know, it's like a World Series hero in baseball. Like
right.
Al Weiss
yep.
or, you know, pick one. Scott Brosius. You know, it's just.
Yep.
But what I wrote down last night as I was watching the game, I wrote down that John Starked his team because of course Starks went. If you're a Knicks fan and remember 94,
I remember that.
John
Houston.
Starks went 2 for 19 and forgot that Patrick Ewing was on his team. I frankly think John Wall, as good as he is, he forgot that Bradley Beal was lighting it up because Bradley Beal was lighting it up, and rather than shoot 7 threes. In the last 19 minutes, I think he should look for Beal virtually every time down. Much like I thought during that game that Stark should have, you know, maybe thrown it into Patrick Ewing, maybe. But maybe that's too harsh. And the one other thing I wanted to say about the Warriors game is very late in that game, Curry made that kind of running floater at the foul line. He took the shot. It hit the back of the rim. It hit the backboard. It went up in the air and came down through the hoop. Do you remember
yep.
which one I mean? Right. It was like next to last basket of the game. Well, right away, I'm old, but right away, and you've seen this shot on tape 1,000 times in the last 20 years, is that Don Nelson Celtics Game 7, 1969.
Yes.
Russell was the player coach. It was his last game. And I'm telling you, Don Nelson took the exact – it wasn't a runner for Nelson. He took the exact shot that hit the back of the rim, hit the backboard,
right up.
Way up in the air, and came back down. I was amazed that nobody, you know, analogized to that. But, again, that just means I'm old. It was eerily similar. And I thought very fortunate, you know, frankly, that Curry made that shot because it was a little bit of an awkward shot even for Curry. But it did go in, and it was a huge basket, I think, like in the last minute of the game.
Yeah, I remember Howard Presley in 1985 had one of them for Nova, and it's part of the reason they shot 80% against Georgetown.
Oh, against
Sometimes
Georgetown,
you gotta be luckier than good. Of course, Steph Curry happens to be both. One last basketball before we move on. I mean, a lot of hoopla around these parts in Philadelphia about the lottery tonight, and you know they're talking about erecting a statue of Sam Hinkie, you know, right next to Rocky and right next to Dr. J. If this thing works out, if they could find him somewhere in Palo Alto. How important is it to the Sixers tonight? I mean, this whole process thing, trust the process. They got a number one pick last year in Ben Simmons. Looks like he might be an elite player. Joel Embiid, if he can stay on the court, obviously looks like he's going to be dynamite. That's a big if, but and they could actually have the first and the fourth pick tonight. If things go right, they could also have the sixth and the seventh. But how important is it tonight to the process?
Well, I think it's a good draft to have two high picks. I think it's guard-oriented at the top, obviously, as we've already talked about. I guess my concern with Philly is these guys seem to come and they get hurt, and then they now they've traded a couple of them away, right? And I thought if they could put all those number ones together, which they can't do now,
right.
I don't know if Embiid is going to be like the center from Ohio State. Greg Oden. I don't know if he's going to be like that or not. If he is, that's a problem. If you have to, you know, monitor his minutes,
sure,
that's
is.
A problem. But I looked at their last, you know, five or six draft, you know, top draft picks, and I was like, wow. But now a couple of them are gone. Did they trade Noel Nerlens? Did they trade him?
Yeah, Noel's gone. MCW's gone.
Yeah,
and,
so.
And Jahlil Okafor is just kind of a lame duck. No one wants him.
Right. So it reminds me a little bit of all those years that Tampa Bay had the number one pick, and they got Josh Hamilton, who frankly flamed out in Tampa Bay because of drugs.
Yep.
They got a bunch of really good guys. Now, look, they made it to a World Series, so I don't know if that would count for they made it.
Sure.
And they became a very good team, but they literally were horrific, like, for 6 years in a row. And then
yeah.
Rocco Baldelli also got that weird disease. He was another top pick.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, they got David Price. They got a lot of top, Evan Longoria. That's the analogy that I see. And even that got broken up a little because of Hamilton and drugs, because of Baldelli and that weird disease that he had. But they were a very good team for a number of years, and I think Joe Maddon knew that he wasn't going to win there and obviously has hit the jackpot in Chicago. But that's
right.
The analogy that I see. Do I think they can get over the hump? The problem is when you bring these stars in and they're all young, and by definition they're young, and today they're really young, you know,
really young
guns essentially. It takes you 2-3 years to get into the flow of the NBA just to get to the playoffs. And now all these guys, looking back a year or two, they've all been hurt. Simmons is a rookie next year. Embiid is, you know, a first full season guy next year, plus whoever they get in the draft. So I think in the, you know, in a couple of weeks, whenever the draft is, we'll have my goodness, look at the talent on this team. But, you know, I don't know if they can bring in some couple of real good veterans. I know we're going to do some baseball, but like Houston was able to bring in, you know, Carlos Beltran and McCann this year. I was watching them beat the Yankees, I think, 3 out of 4 the other day, and I'm like, wow, McCann and Beltran is just what Houston needs. But I don't know if Philly in basketball versus baseball free agency, I don't know if Philly can bring that kind of high quality. These guys are still contributing. I don't know if they can bring in that high quality veteran. They can bring a veteran in to be a presence in the locker room, but if he's the seventh man, I don't know if it's the same as having a guy who's a really good player.
No, I agree. They're not ready to attract, I said this on the air the other day, attract high-end free agents. No one wants to come here yet. No one wants to come here. Everyone's young. Everyone's been hurt. And, in fact, I said this stat on the air the other day. Of the four guys, Noel, Okafor, Embiid, and Simmons, all the, you know, the Sam Hinkie plan, they've played a total of 37% of the possible games. 37% combined. So, and they've missed four seasons combined, four total seasons. So, we shall see. We shall see tonight.
Well, I will say this, Joe. Part of the plan has to be, and this is a rising problem in every sport, and I don't know if you can predict it. You know, they talk about, oh, you can't predict heart. You can't predict, you know, hustle. But can you predict injury? And the answer seems to be no, obviously, because otherwise they wouldn't have drafted. I don't know if they would have drafted Simmons. Oh, you're going to miss the first year. Oh, we'll take him anyway. You know, I don't know if part of the process now has to be trying to make, I don't know if it's a medical thing where you get doctors to look at things, but can these guys be durable? Because I think durability has become, talk about the lost art or the lost factor.
Sure.
Who plays today? Who pitches? You know, the Mets with the greatest pitching staff in the history of the world, if they're all either not on the DL or getting rocked, they haven't had a pitcher go, I don't think they've pitched a pitcher out of the sixth inning in like 15 starts. And you're talking about Harvey and Syndergaard and Mats and DeGrom. And you're sitting there going, what I said to you a few weeks ago. Well, I bet you this, if Bartolo Colon was still here, he'd be into the seventh inning a few times.
Everybody
laughed in 2014 when they were going to trade Murphy and Colon at the trading deadline. In 2014, I wrote an article. I said, don't trade these guys. Murphy's a professional hitter. There's not many of them. And this is before he went nuts in the playoffs and before he, you know, was an MVP candidate with Washington. And whatever you think of Colon, he's got to be glue in the clubhouse and he's going to throw 200 innings. This was so obvious, but I think durability has to be part of the plan in Philly. Now, can you really, you tell me, I don't know, can you really scout for that? Can you plan for that? Again, I guess you can consult doctors, but Embiid had had problems in college, I think. I don't think Simmons had, but you got to be careful now, and these guys are playing so much when they're little. You know, they talk about baseball pitchers and the travel teams when they're 13, 15, 17. What about these basketball kids who are playing 80 games a year when they're 13?
Sure.
It doesn't seem to
be raised as much, I guess,
is what I'm saying.
You might not be able to predict, and they say your best ability is your availability, and I don't know you can predict certain injuries that come on, like the Paul George knee injury or things like that. But Embiid was the best player available. He fell to three because Wiggins was taken. But he, there was concern there. First of all, he hasn't been playing that long, and so he hasn't been, you know, there's not a lot of wear on those wheels. And he had a bad, he never played a full season in Kansas. He missed two seasons with a hairline fracture of his foot. Two seasons. And I called him a bust, not talent-wise. I called him a bust about 2 years ago because this thing to me is going to continue. And then he has a meniscus tear, which isn't a big deal, and I know they're babying him, so they sit him out. He played 31 games out of 242. I love the guy when he's on the court. There was basketball craze around here in January when he helped the team win 10 games, but if he's not going to play, and that's something that I see in the future, is just it's just going to keep happening. But, you know, we shall see. This is Joe Stazek, Callis Remarks with Joe Stazek and Steve Callis. Let's transition to the NHL quickly, because I do know we want to get to some baseball. Four teams left. We'll start with the East. Penguins clinging to life last night. They were on life support if they lose that game, 2-0. They lost the first game in overtime. Bobby Ryan, a phenomenal goal after Pittsburgh tied it late. And last night, they come up big again. Phil Kessel late in the third, and Marc-Andre Fleury looks like Marc-Andre Fleury of 2009, but I know some people are thinking this is a closer series. I liked Ottawa against New York. I just like the way they're playing. I like Erik Karlsson. I like Bobby Ryan. Craig Anderson's playing out of his mind. I didn't know if they would have a real shot against Penguins. I think they do. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I like the Penguins, but I think you're right. After seeing what they did to the Rangers and, you know, if you know the Anderson story, and, you know, frankly,
sure,
I thought he was really, really good in game two. The fact that the Penguins didn't score three or four goals is a credit to him.
Great.
But as you know, you only need one. Going back to the first game, Bobby Ryan also made that incredible pass, that first goal to Pageau, who, of course, scored four goals in one game against the Rangers, so I'll never forget him. But that was an incredible, weird hockey play, because Pittsburgh actually had possession of the puck behind the net, and then the guy left it for somebody else, and somehow Bobby Ryan got there and gave, like, the blind pass right out to Pageau, where I don't even know if Fleury knew where the puck was. I don't even know if he knew who had the puck, and that was a huge play. And then, as you said, Bobby Ryan made an incredible play in overtime, you know, pretty much on his own to get that game-winning OT goal. Pittsburgh, as you know, 0-for-5 in the power play in the first game, 3-for-22 versus the Washington Capitals. So, you know, I think obviously they've got real problems with the power play that they're going to have to take care of. But Fleury was Fleury. And again, I thought he was very good in game one as well, and he's been very good throughout the playoffs. Maybe one game I thought that he was bad. I think they should have pulled him that one game, but it didn't matter. But the Penguins, you know, did what they had to do in the second game. I don't know if Crosby's Crosby. You tell me. He doesn't seem to be, to me. No one's really said anything about his health, except he's out there playing. And, you know, I'm not sure the concussion protocol in the NHL is the concussion protocol in the NFL.
Not even close.
I'm not sure exactly what it is. And I only thought of that when I saw Roethlisberger was at game two, which you probably saw.
Game.
But, you know, Rust took a tremendous hit from Phaneuf. Brian Rust, I don't know if he's out. Schultz, I don't know if he's out. Letang is already out. So they keep,
yep.
You know, I give the Penguins a lot of credit because Crosby obviously missed that one game. But Malkin's been really good. You know, he set up, that was a beautiful pass Malkin made between the guy's legs to Kessel for the only goal.
Gorgeous,
so,
gorgeous.
I think it's becoming almost a survival of the fittest. And, you know, I still think from what I've seen, I think Carlson has been the best player in the playoffs. They don't beat the Rangers
yep.
without him making multiple incredible plays. But I still like Pittsburgh. You know, I hate to change my picks. But certainly you're right. Ottawa can win. And Anderson has been great. You know, if they win and get to the finals, he's a Conn Smythe Trophy candidate. As are,
no,
frankly, all the goalies at this point.
I totally agree. Yeah, in hockey, they basically just ask the guy, you okay to go out back out there? Yep, I'm all right, you're out
that's,
there.
That's concussion protocol in the NHL.
That's concussion protocol. If the guy can answer a question with clarity, then he's fine. That's how
you know,
I'll
say this. Once in my life when I was a little kid, I got hit in the head in the Little League game with a wraparound helmet that was just disgusting, and we were at a VA hospital in the Bronx playing for the veterans. And they took me inside and they gave me smelling salts. And,
did they really?
And all I can say is this. If you ever see someone put smelling salts under a guy and he has no response, he's like half dead. Because I've never smelled anything. It shook me up right away. But that's what I was thinking. Do they even do smelling salts anymore? Would they do it to like a Crosby? Does he know where he is? The test to me usually was in the old days. Do you know where you are? You know, like they
right.
talk about football players who ran to the wrong, you know, to the wrong team.
Right.
Side.
You go over
they ran
the right
up the field
to the wrong
well,
bench.
You know, that guy doesn't know, or even in the game, I think guy would go to the wrong huddle or something.
Right.
but I think, look, I give Crosby a ton of credit. But he's taken a hellacious beating, and I just don't think he's quite Crosby. Now, hopefully he'll prove me wrong, because I do like the Penguins in this series. But he hasn't seemed to me to be the same. Now, can they win without him? Well, they've lost so many other guys besides him, although it is true that Malkin plays great when Crosby either
he
is
does,
out of the lineup
out.
Or isn't 100%. And, you know, again, he did it again last night with a great pass.
He did. You talked about the goaltenders, possible Conn Smythe Trophy winners, future Conn Smythe Trophy winners. We can talk about Pekka Rene.
Yeah.
And that series in with Anaheim. Anaheim, again, clinging to life. Predators have a two-goal lead after they win game one on the road, and you know, Anaheim basically escaped. But I got to be honest, I like the way Nashville's playing. They're 9-3. Like you said a couple weeks ago, it's not like they have a ton of superstars, although, you know, I like Subban, and Rene, but they seem to have a steady lineup, and they just roll three or four quality lines at you. And I like the way they're playing. Laviolette has them believing that they can win, and I'm not saying they're going to win or they're a lock to win, but I kind of look at patterns and trends and see how a team has developed and how they've come together, not just looking at their regular season record or Anaheim or the body of work in the regular season. But I like what Nashville's doing. Who do you like in that series?
Well, I liked Anaheim from the beginning. I'm going to stay with them. I like the Penguins. They both lost their first game. I was like, oh, boy, but I don't want to jinx these teams. But they both won the second game. But I agree on a number of things. Another guy Nashville has who is a big-time player and was with the Penguins, as you know, is James Neal. Who won game one, who scored again in game two. You know, he's one of those guys. But I think Anaheim, and I think Anaheim's going to win this series for this reason. They just decided in game two we're going to go out and beat up Nashville. We're just going to beat
yep.
them up every time. And I don't mean just take the body. I mean they're going out of their way to try and punish these guys. And it was interesting, this Ryan Johansson, who's a very good player for Nashville. He's 6'4". I guess he's one of these Swedish guys. But he was talking about Ryan Kessler, who Barry Melrose, Kessler of Anaheim, Barry Melrose
yep.
described him as, quote, he's got violence in his head, close quote. So they, so he took a few runs at Ryan Johansson, 6'4" Ryan Johansson.
Yeah.
And
yep.
and you could tell when he was talking, I don't know if you saw that, it was fascinating to watch because Johansson was like, well, you know, it's very hard, you know, it's not really hockey. I'm here to play hockey. I can't believe that guy plays the way he plays. And then he said at the end, quote, It's hard. It doesn't make sense how he plays. It's hard to play hockey when you, quote, have to pull a stick out of your groin every shift. Now, on the one hand, he's telling the truth. But on
right.
the other hand, Barry Melrose, in the real, real world of hockey, as you know, for 100 years, you know, Melrose was like, well, Kessler's in Johansson's head. When Johansson comes out to play game three, he's going to be thinking, am I going to get a stick in my groin?
Absolutely.
My
guy's going to be protecting his groin.
And, you know, this goes back to the Broad Street Bullies of the 70s. I hated those teams. I hated Schultz. When Schultz almost killed Dale Rolfe in the 70s,
yes.
I was like, man,
yes.
why don't they outlaw these guys? But, don't, I don't know about Schultz, but those guys could play. Bobby Clark could play. I mean, Leach was
yep.
unbelievable, you know.
Yep.
So I don't like that kind of hockey myself, but because of them, and, you know, look, if you go way back to the 50s and the 40s, and even before, I mean, hockey was a terribly violent sport.
And
guys used to just go out swinging sticks. So this is not new. What's new is, again, we're trying to protect. But, yeah, Kessler is a little over the top. I didn't know he had violence in his head. I don't know if Barry Melrose knows that. But he's that edgy guy. You know, if he's on your team,
sure.
Joe, you love him.
Oh, you love
him. If he's on any of the other teams, you hate him. And that's
hate
just
him.
The reality of it is. The other thing I'll say is this was the 14th multi – this is an ESPN stat or Elias Sports Bureau. This was the 14th multi-goal comeback this postseason, the all-time record. So two or more goals, including, of course, Anaheim, you know, when they pulled the goalie down 3-0 in the last series.
Yeah, 3-0,
but they're
yeah.
only one shy of the 2014 record, which is 15. And, again, I'm old enough to remember if you had a two-goal lead, like going into the third period of a playoff game, the game was over.
yeah.
There was no way
yeah.
guys were going to score two. I'm not talking about the
Shutting
Oilers
down.
In the 80s. I'm talking
right.
before that. And it was just amazing to me, and I know I complained to you on air about it with the Rangers because they gave up a bunch of two-goal leads
sure,
to Ottawa. And it's just a different game. Is it more wide open? I think a lot of it has to do, frankly, I'd like to know how many of those finished off with pulling the goalie earlier. We talked about this before.
Sure.
Because
yep.
of those 14, I'm going to guess 4 or 5, and of course Anaheim the best one, 3 goals down, but I'm going to guess 4 or 5 of those, either the one instance 3, but either 2 goals or 1 goal was scored at the end. I don't know if these guys get too tired now. You know, a thing we've never talked about is how short shifts are nowadays compared to 10,
yep.
20, 30, 50 years ago. When I talk about the greatest Ranger who ever lived, which we've talked about, Frank Boucher in the 20s and 30s, who when the Rangers won the Stanley Cup in 1928, they scored 5 goals in their 3 wins, and Boucher scored 4 of them. When I talk about him back then, you played like, you know, they had like 2 lines. You went out there and played for 5 minutes or more. So it's hard now. I know you can't do that today, although I will point out Carlson. You know, Carlson's logging like 30 minutes a game. I know he's a defenseman,
that's
so he's going to play more. But he's logging 30 minutes a game, so that's how
incredible.
Good he is. But, you know, to see like 40-second shifts, which you see a lot, I think at the end of the game, the defense who's playing, you know, just like in football, they're playing prevent defense. I think that wears you down. You think maybe you're
sure
saving
does.
Yourself, but the goalie's under siege, and then you pull the other goalie with 2 or 3 or 3.5 minutes left. That's different than the way it used to be.
No, totally agree. Kalis Remarks, Joe Stazak, and Steve Kalis. Got about 7 minutes left, my friend. Let's transition into baseball. Derek Jeter, I know you're a Yankee guy, 21st number retired. He retired number 2 and said he wouldn't trade places with anybody. Your thoughts on Jeter, his career, and the ceremony the other day?
Well, you know, again, the Yankees, they have the players to show up to do this kind of thing. Again, I'm an old-timer. You know, my father grew up in the era of Ruth and Gehrig, DiMaggio. You know, I saw Mantle play a lot when I was a kid. It was a big deal. And as great as Jeter is, and he's great, and he's a great Yankee, you know, even the guys who love him say, yeah, well, if we can include, you know, if we can make Mount Rushmore 5 guys, we can put Derek Jeter number 5. And I'm not even sure of that because you can make a big case for Yogi Berra to be number 5. But
sure.
The Yankees do it right. When I was a kid to go to old-timers games and see these Yankees from the 40s and 50s and 30s, you didn't see Ruth, obviously. You didn't see Gehrig, but you saw all these other guys. It's just an amazing thing. So you give Jeter all the credit in the world, five championships today. you know, they don't have like Kansas City as the farm team like the Yankees did in the 50s into the 60s. You know, they got Roger Maris for like nothing, and the guy was the MVP of the league the first 2 years he played with the Yankees, including 61 homers in, you know, 1961. An expansion year, by the way. I'm not trying to knock those guys. I'm just saying.
Sure.
And I'm also saying that there should be, you know, they made fun of Ford Frick for, they said they put an asterisk next to Roger Maris's name in the record book because Babe Ruth had done it in 154 and Maris had done it in 162.
Sure.
But I always took the position they should have two separate record books. They should put them both down because I think if Babe Ruth had eight more games, I think he might have got one more home run, maybe two, you know.
Probably, sure.
Same thing happened with Ichiro, one of my favorite players of all time. George Sisler, the 257 hits in a year was from like the 20s, and Ichiro finally broke it, but he played in the 162-game season, and Sisler played in the 154-game season. We've talked about this on air, I think. NFL records, 12 games, 14 games, 16 games.
Sure.
That's even more prevalent because they've increased the season by 25%. So, again, I don't want to get off on tangents, but I will say this, and I'm a Yankee guy. They retire way too many numbers. I mean, it's just it's flash forward 100 years. Everybody's going to be wearing over the number 50. I mean, look.
Or zero.
To me,
the only single digit number they haven't retired is zero.
Yeah, which I don't know. Is that even a number? And does anyone wear it? I guess you could wear it. But
Girardi said he wouldn't have. He wouldn't be against it. Cashman said that same thing, but no one's asked for it.
Yeah, I don't know about wearing number zero, but whatever. Look, they do it right. My only complaint about Derek Jeter ever. And it's the Michael Jordan complaint. You know, didn't Michael Jordan famously say Republicans buy sneakers too when someone asked him to take a stand on something? So Jeter's never said that, but that's something Jeter's thinking, I think. So my only complaint about Jeter, and it's a small one because you got to give him credit on and off the field. You know, once Matt Harvey said he wanted to be like, you know, he wanted to be Derek Jeter, you know, like his career is over in New York. He just doesn't know it yet. That's when it ended. Nobody told him. But, you know, a guy like Jeter with his platform, with his ability, with his Turn 2 Foundation, you know, I'd like to see him take a stand, even if they're not my stands. But, you know, I'd like to see him take a stand, and he just will not and never has. You know, when you hear, oh, exclusive interview with Derek Jeter. Oh, exclusive interview with Michael Jordan. What do you care? Seriously, what are you going to hear? So that would be my only, but that's just a personal thing. I think these guys should take a stand. You know, I was a little kid in the era of Jim Brown and Ali and Al Cinder. Later Kareem, you know, but I remember those things. And I just think now there are guys doing it today. Unfortunately, it's the backup quarterback for the 49ers. You know, I give Kaepernick a lot of credit. He might have run himself out of the league. And if he didn't run himself out of the league, he's run himself into a backup position where wherever he shows up, the people are going to be furious with him. You know, so we can debate that some other time, but they really do it right at the stadium. They've retired way too many numbers. And I don't care what anyone says. You know, I'm happy to debate that with a Yankee fan. But it at what point?
And he
does
deserve to be among that crew. Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He might be five on the list. Again, I'd go Berra myself. But you know, people forget. You know, Francesa in New York for years said, "Well, Derek Jeter is not about the numbers." Well, I don't know about that. I understand his intangibles, but he's got some of the greatest numbers in the history of baseball.
Got numbers.
Number six all-time in hits. To hit 310 for 20 seasons in the modern era, to me that's like 340 in the old days. Right.
Yeah, those are
cool
numbers.
So he deserves everything he gets. You know, I hope he gets the Marlins. I don't know what he's going to do with them. They're playing pretty bad. Is he going to fire Don Mattingly? Does he want to buy the Miami Marlins and then fire, you know, Mattingly? You know, they had that nice Mattingly tribute on the scoreboard, which was pretty cool because, you know, you probably know Mattingly's last year was 95. Jeter was up there for a cup of coffee, and Mattingly was no longer Mattingly because of his back, of course. But they made the playoffs, and Mattingly played great, only time he was in the playoffs. And then he retired, and then, you know, the Yankees took off. So I'm a big Jeter guy. He's a great player. We can do it both ways, offense and defense. You know, what's the greatest play in Jeter's career? They had all these polls. There's no doubt in my mind it's the flip play. I'm down for Mr. November as well, but they lost that series. They won that game, but they lost that series. But the flip play, which kept them in against Oakland, you know, that's one of the greatest, maybe the greatest heads-up play in the history of baseball.
Incredibly heads-up,
So
yeah.
I like what they do. The Yankees can do it. And, you know, I give them full credit. That's my only minor complaint. The last stat I'll give you on Jeter, which is a great one, is he's got 200 hits.
You only have a few seconds.
200 hits in 158 playoff games.
He's unbelievable. We got to go, Stephen. Callis from Marks with Joe Stazek and Steve Callis. Thanks for listening, everybody.